for a long time, and still today in some circles, quantifying humanitarian progress has been done by the crude exclusive economic GDP measurement model. Measuring the market value of all officially recognised goods in a particular year does completely miss the issue of the urban poor being forced into informality. It wouldn't even register on a measure of GDP growth. Human development, on the other hand, is sensitive to these issues. Nussbaum's capabilities approach to human development is an attempt to identify a set of key opportunities that should be provided by any minimally just society. Her approach focuses on the protection of these areas that are so central that their removal makes a life not worthy of human dignity. So it is a theory of development, and it's a theory of social justice, and it aims to tackle the entrenched inequality and suffering within our present context. It's a way of asking pretty important questions for development practitioners, like, what are people actually able to do and be? What agency do they have? What opportunities are available for them to flourish? In attempting to answer what a human life with dignity might require, Nussbaum actually believes that decent housing is central, both to the capability of bodily health and the capability to control one's environment. And she specifically highlights in her 10-point approach that property rights and having them on equal basis with others is a key provision that the state should look into. For Nussbaum and the human development paradigm, property rights are important and the state has a role to play. In this light, we can see property rules as institutional mechanisms that can make stable communities and set the conditions for human flourishing. These mechanisms fall within the state's domain and, where possible, should be extended to those who cannot secure tenure within existing market mechanisms. So the human development approach has been hugely influential in providing a framework and language for development agencies worldwide. The question of development and how we understand land as a part of it is an important question for the organisation I work for, Habitat for Humanity Australia. Habitat Australia has built into its development model the idea that shelter provision, and by extension tenure security, is of central importance to community development. Through adequate shelter, we believe we can affect change in areas of education, health, community development and livelihoods. Our pivot towards programming in Sri Lanka and Cambodia in shelter and land tenure areas is an acknowledgement, I guess, of the importance of tenure in finding innovative solutions to inadequate shelter in urban areas. Okay, so how to understand land? Typically, there are two somewhat opposing points of view. First, the classical liberal tradition, where private property, which is as we understand it in Australia and the States and Europe, is understood as secure, freehold land tenure. In liberal individualist societies, such property arrangements are historically been seen as a buffer to power politics, insulating the individual from the unnecessary meddling of the state. This tradition understands property as transferable, exclusive, enforceable, commodified, and private. In contrast, there is an emerging progressive, socially oriented approach to land that pays more attention to land's social function. In other words, land is more than its exchange value, its price tag. It actually has a use value or a social function that helps us live good lives. Land's social function calls into question the liberalist commitment to limiting the scope of state intervention in the domain of individual property rights. And it opens up political and moral questions about how you balance the individual ownership model of land with appreciation for land's social function. So the debate over the most desirable approach to viewing land rights fits firmly within the field of political philosophy. It connects to questions about how things ought to be and how we should structure society to allow for human flourishing. These questions, although lofty, are integral to the lived experience for many urban poor. And it's worth mentioning that the debate is ongoing. There's no full stop in this debate, nor should there be. Even here in Sydney, we have the question of land's economic value versus social value coming up in
series of stories over the last few months. The first picture there is of the Royal Botanical Gardens,
and you may have heard in the news that there's a proposed $80 million upgrade to these gardens, including a railway station, a hotel and a ferry port, among other things. And it's drawn criticism, among them Paul Keating, from those who really wish to see it remain a refuge from the bustling city it sits adjacent to. The picture on the right, the second issue in the Sydney context, is the social housing in expensive Millers Point, a prestigious suburb in the Rocks in Sydney. In the Sydney Morning Herald on March 30 this year, the New South Wales state government released the decision to sell public housing in this high value inner city suburb. And it raised questions about the social cleansing of the inner city. Perhaps spoken most controversially, it also raises questions about class-based organisation in cities. If the New South Wales state government proceeds down the path, some have suggested it may end up looking like, Sydney may end up looking like London under Thatcher, where public housing was privatised and the low-income residents were forced out of the city.